Hello, I'm Kate Chabot. Welcome to an extra edition of the SITREP podcast. Leaders matter greatly, but in searching so zealously for better leaders, we tend to lose sight of the people these leaders will lead. That quote is the starting point for a new doctrine note from the Army Center for Leadership. It's about the concept of followership, which it says promotes unity and belonging and is the foundation for high-performance cultures. But what exactly is followership? Is it just the result of good leadership or something that needs to be developed in its own right? And how does it fit with the principle of command? We'll get some answers to those questions from Lieutenant Colonel Dean Canham. But before that, I've been talking to one of the leading authorities on the subject. Barbara Kellerman is a fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School's Center for Public Leadership, and her book, Followership: How Followers Are Creating Change and Changing Leaders, is cited in the Army's new doctrine. Barbara, really great to meet you. Thank you for your time. Would you please just start by explaining in a few sentences what is followership?
Well, followership is the converse of leadership. So let me begin by saying that leadership inevitably is a relationship. You cannot have a leader without at least one follower. Most leaders have more than one, but there is no such thing as a leader without a follower. So to look at leaders without looking at followers, to look at leadership without looking at followers, has never made any sense to me. And if I can just add one more sentence, I always think, and I've written about this, not of leadership as a single individual, but as a system with three parts that are equal. Part one is the leader. Part two, of equal importance, is the follower. And part three, also of equal importance, is the context, within which leaders and followers are embedded. Cannot understand leadership without followership and without understanding the context within which both inevitably are embedded.
And you've written quite critically of the leadership industry. From what you say, followership is not an alternative to leadership. They are complementary and intertwined with the context that you just spoke about as well.
They are complementary and intertwined. But if you look at this historically, and by the way, Great Britain is an example, the United States is an example, you will also see that over time, leaders have gotten weaker and followers have gotten stronger. So no leader leads now without, at least not in the Western world, without taking into account the well-being, the preferences, the opinions of his or her followers. The examples are countless, but if you look at the approval ratings of leaders in liberal democracies, Western liberal democracies, you'll see they're generally low. Why? Because followers, voters, constituents, ordinary people have no patience for their leaders, and they're just as likely to want them out as to want them in. So the other way of looking at it is that followers matter far more now than they do in the 21st century than they did even at the beginning of this century.
And leadership has always been central to the armed forces. What advantages are there to be gained from militaries embracing followership?
Well, I think it's impossible to lead. Again, I want to separate out totalitarian or authoritarian systems from what I'm saying, because they obviously have wholly different attitudes. But in the West, if you talk to members of any military, including the American and the British military, you will find that the old command and control style of leading, which worked very well until relatively recently, is no longer so successful. Followers, especially of the younger generation, there are generational differences here as well. They demand, in general, to have much more of a voice than they did in the past. And this demand, this expectation that they be given a set of rights that they didn't have 25, 50 years ago, not to speak of 500, is ubiquitous in the West. And any leader who does not understand the changing times is almost certain to run into trouble.
The concept of good leadership resulting in good followers has been central to military ethos for centuries. Is that the same, or do you think it is different and set apart to leadership within wider society?
You know, there are, as I said earlier, context always matters. The leading in military is not like leading in schools, is not like leading in politics, is not like one leading in business. So one of the fascinating things about leadership is that invariably it is complicated. One wishes it could be simple. So with regard to this question, I can only say there are some universals, particularly in Western democracy, some things that transcend sectors and cultures and countries and contexts, but there are other things that are very different. So any leader who's smart, any follower who's smart, will pay attention both to the similarities and to the differences.
You've been writing about followership across the decades now. How much traction has the concept built in that time?
That's a great question. Not as much as I would like, but more than nothing. In other words, when I first started writing about followership, I would type the word into my computer and I would get a red line under it because it was considered to be a misspelling. So we made progress because that doesn't happen anymore. But there's no question that the fixation is still on the leader. I happen to be a deviant not only in that I focus on followers, but I write as much about bad leadership as I do about good leadership. And I can assure you, you cannot have a bad leader without bad followers willing to go along to support the leader, or at least not to fight the leader. And that's a concept. What do you do if you're a follower and you have a bad leader, a leader who's either unethical or inadequate in some way? Do you do nothing? Do you do something? So the idea that followership is still not nearly of equal importance with leadership is bothersome to me, but I'm doing the best I can. And yes, we have made some progress for sure in the last 10, 20 years.
So what does followership look like? How do you create it?
Well, it's not that you create it. It exists just like, you know, it exists because some people are leaders and some other people are followers. The question is, how do you create good followers? Excuse me, how do you create followers who are engaged, followers who are supportive of good leaders and who are not supportive of bad leaders? I wish followership would be given the same amount of attention and education as leaders. In fact, I relate it to being a good citizen, to being participatory, but not necessarily approving of someone who you feel is in some way behaving erroneously or even wrong. So it's not a question of creating followers because followers by definition exist. The trick is to create followers who are supportive when things are going right, but who have the courage to speak up when things are not going right.
Isn't good followership an automatic result of good leadership?
Is it automatic? That's a good question. I'd have to think about that. I'm not sure that it is. One would like to think that it is, but I think there are probably plenty of good leaders out there who are doing the best they can, reasonably moral and reasonably effective, but who have a disengaged constituency. And I think in general, in the third decade of the 21st century, we as ordinary people are so engaged and distracted, our attention spans are so short, that unless we're somehow obliged to pay attention, again, the military is an exception because the differences between the military and the rest of society are very considerable. So I don't want to say across the board, but in the society at large, followers tend to be distracted and disengaged and easily dissatisfied, even when they have a good leader. Do I grant that a good leader is more likely to have good followers? Yes. But can that good leader take it for granted? Absolutely not.
So what is needed to grow good followership?
I would say the first thing is consciousness raising, meaning being aware that followers not only exist, but that they matter. And then particularly in the third decade, again, I keep mentioning the time because, as I said, context is important. And if we were having this conversation 10 years ago, before, for example, the ubiquity of social media, before the culture had changed so dramatically, it would be different. So we're talking in the present 2024. And I would say that good followership now requires, above all, understanding the integral importance of followers to leaders, the integral importance of good followership to good leadership, and giving followers some stake in the game, that they understand that they are not trivial, that they are not subordinates in any sense of the word except along some kind of hierarchical ladder, that they matter. And if they feel they matter, they will generally behave accordingly. If they feel they don't matter, if they're treated the way they would have been 50 or 100 years ago, those days are gone and the leader will suffer in consequence.
Since you mentioned subordinates, you said earlier that your analysis, your thoughts, that this works in a democracy. What about dictators like Vladimir Putin or Kim Jong-un? Don't they just need to keep the vast majority of people scared to follow them?
So if you've got time for me to say a few sentences in response to that question, I will, because it's very important, especially in the military, who need to understand globally what's going on. So very quickly, in every dictatorship that comes quickly to mind, whether it's, by the way, let's say even autocracy, whether we're talking Turkey or Egypt or China or Russia, every one of them is stranglehold on followers, on citizens, on ordinary people has gotten tighter in the last 10 years. Putin's Russia, you mentioned Putin's Russia, is a great case in point. Why has this happened? It's not an accident that Putin was less oppressive 10, 12 years ago by far than he is now. Why? Again, because, as I said earlier, followers have gotten more restless and restive. They have gotten more demanding, more fractious. And these leaders are correct. The Xi Jinpings of the world, the Putins of the world, they are correct. Unless their grip is much tighter than it was 10 years ago, their followers are going to take advantage the way they do in Western democracies. Look at the approval ratings of your Rishi Sunak or my Joe Biden or Macron in France or Schulz in Germany. They struggle to have even reasonably good approval ratings, and most of them don't because, as I said at the start of our conversation, followers are less approving, more demanding, more difficult than they used to be.
Barbara Kellerman, great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Well, let's speak now to Lieutenant Colonel Dean Canham, who is head of the Center for Army Leadership. Great to speak to you. Why is the Army interested in followership? What can it do for the service?
Well, thanks for having me, Kate. It's a great opportunity for us at the Center for Army Leadership to talk about this relatively new subject for the Army. The Center for Army Leadership did a fair amount of research into what has mainly been an academic discussion on followership previously. It's not something the Army, as you say, is familiar with. And we recognize that perhaps the first hurdle in an Army talking about it is that it perhaps got some negative connotations behind the phrase. Naturally, we talk a lot about leadership in the Army, rightly so, but we haven't really spoken about followership. But having done the research and some thinking on it, we realized how much positive progress can be made with looking at followership as a topic in its own right and how it links in with leadership. And the outcome from that was a doctrine note, which we wrote and which is available on any search engine, the British Army's Followership Doctrine Note, which is the Army's first inroads to talking about introducing the subject and looking at the benefits of followership. And the basis of it is, if we accept that everyone in the Army is a follower all of the time, whilst some of us are leaders some of the time, then we realize that there's a whole Army cohort that can be engaged on followership as a skill. And if it's a skill like leadership, which can be taught and learned and practiced, then we can all be better at it. And if we are all better followers supporting leaders, then that should have benefits for the whole organization.
You mentioned before that when you first were exploring the concept that there were potential negative connotations. What are they? What were your concerns?
Well, there's just this thought, perhaps, that being a follower isn't necessarily a positive thing. And there are some academics and authors who espouse the benefits of everyone being a leader rather than everyone being a follower. And of course, there's all sorts of different ways you can spin the wording. The Army perhaps has a slightly nuanced view in that we also have interrelationships with command, authority vested in people by their rank or their position, and management as well. And so whilst we would look for leadership qualities and skills and activities in everyone all of the time as well, there is, of course, usually one person in charge as far as authority is concerned most of the time. And so there's a useful distinction for us between having followers and leaders, distinct from commanders and managers. And if we're looking at a whole army concept where some people are leading some of the time, everyone is following all of the time, then we're incorporating every individual in the army. We're bringing leadership and followership together as what might be termed as teamship. And if you get those two leaders and followers operating around what is a shared purpose or a mission or an objective within a common set of values, then actually you get a whole force, much more complementary relationship rather than people being entirely passive in any of their roles that they're in.
So can you give me some examples of what this means in practice?
Yeah, so I think if you look at some of the skills, character traits, and the like of what we would deem exemplary followers, things like being responsible, being mission-focused, confronting issues, being trustworthy, using initiative, being values-driven, those sorts of things, they all look and feel a bit like really good leadership traits as well. And so where we seek to train some individuals in leadership some of the time, if we're training everyone in those sorts of traits and characteristics all the time, not only are you getting people to follow more effectively, you are actually generating the skills that are required for good leaders in the future as well. And people can move between these roles, following and leading, very quickly, usually several times a day. And in fact, some people, just in their methods of following, can switch between types of followership depending on who's asking them to do what, how much they believe in it, how enthusiastic they are about it, etc. And so you can move around on the followership scale several times as well.
And if you want followership to be part of the army, you need soldiers at every level on board. How would you explain it to a private who's just out of basic training?
So our point would be, firstly, to recognize it. And if we get people talking about it and recognizing it as a term, it, even for a private soldier straight out of basic training, imbues in them a sense of responsibility to follow well. Perhaps otherwise, people would not self-identify as a leader, even though at the most junior level, you could have private soldiers finding themselves leading in short, small tactical scenarios. And it imbues a responsibility to act as a good follower. And if everyone is being proactive in how they follow, a lot of that could be in supporting leaders as best as possible to achieve that shared mission or task, then actually it energizes the youngest or most junior or most inexperienced soldiers and officers to take action, realize they have responsibilities specifically as a follower, even if they don't identify themselves or aren't appointed as a leader. And so it's about making sure people realize they have got something to add and they have got a responsibility to act. And being a good follower is a really useful method to communicate that message to people.
Of course, you have formal leadership training for people in those roles. How do you train the whole army for followership?
That's a really good point, and that's really our next step. Now that we've written the doctrine and we've started the conversations about it, we hosted a whole day conference focused on followership in November, which people can find on YouTube if they search for the Centre for Army Leadership. And we now need to incorporate that into the routine of all the courses and training that people undertake. We've just in the process of publishing a leader competency framework, which details all the things we would require any organization in the Army that's conducting any training on leadership to incorporate all those skills, traits, and characteristics of good or great leadership. And incorporated into that is also elements of followership. So as that's now being staffed out through the whole Army system, without even realizing it, soldiers and officers in the future will see followership as a term which is more familiar to them in their everyday training.
And your doctrine note points out that followership and leadership are inextricably linked. Isn't good followership a natural consequence of good leadership?
Absolutely. And if you look at it from the other direction, perhaps, then you aren't a leader unless you have followers. And some would suggest that you're only a leader if your followers decide that you are. And in the Army, we can make a clear distinction, perhaps, between commanders and leaders. It might be the same person, but it might be using either of those two roles in different ways at different times. So we would like to think that everyone can lead really well all of the time and that people would then naturally follow. Sometimes people might not be a particularly great or experienced leader, and they might be relying more on the authority that comes with command. It might be that the situation dictates that command, a fairly transactional directive approach, is appropriate, but that's not very often. And actually, good leadership supported with good followership and vice versa is a much more sustainable method of interacting between soldiers, officers, and the Army more broadly as well.
As you're suggesting, there is a difference between command and leadership. How do you maintain that command structure and ethos where people do what they're told if you're also encouraging a consent-led followership?
Yeah, so you might be familiar with the phrase mission command. Mission command is one of the core philosophies in the Army's doctrine, which effectively says that what we will always seek to do is tell people why they are doing something and what the outcome needs to be, and then allow them to get on with it rather than micromanaging them through how they're actually going to achieve it. Followership absolutely underpins mission command, and it will make mission command a whole lot more effective. And it's already a well-trusted and known part of our doctrine. So followership underpins mission command absolutely. And we've also incorporated, there's only one short annex on the followership doctrine there, and that was on challenge, and where we exist in a very hierarchical organization, perhaps challenge, especially up between ranks, could be perceived as particularly difficult. We physically wear our rank on our chest, and so it's a very obvious, perhaps, barrier to people challenging. But if mission command is to work well, and if we're to encourage a culture where the appropriate challenge at the right time is a positive aspect of the command and leadership relationship, then that will also be a positive thing. And perhaps we might iterate challenge as a concept in the Army a bit, because even in itself, challenge is a challenging word. It's adversarial. It makes people defensive if you say that you are challenging them, no matter how polite or the fact they might be the right time could be. And so perhaps it's a culture of offering views and knowing how to receive them well is a better phrase. A culture where people are expected to offer their views and opinions at the right time, and you probably have to spend as much time teaching people how to receive the offers of ideas as well. But most organizations recognize that as entirely healthy.
Of course, society evolves, the forces evolve. Is followership more important for services made up of millennials and Gen Z than it was for Generation Z, X and baby boomers?
I don't think it's more important. I think that the nature of what the Army does is consistent. And from the young soldiers and officers that I still see, meet and work with, I see all the same values and sense of purpose in them that I saw or felt myself more than 20 years ago when I joined. I think the context and how we communicate, how we operate with people has changed. But I think fundamentally, people are still joining the Army for the same reasons. They still adhere to and sign up to the Army's values and standards. And ultimately, that's the common basis for us going forward. So I don't think that there is a generational difference in the requirement for good followership and great leadership. But I think perhaps we do need to think, and the Centre for Army Leadership does a lot of it on the Army's behalf, about how we apply it, certainly.
You put a lot of work into this and you have more planned. How do you hope followership will improve the Army?
Well, the next stage is, as we do the next iteration of Army leadership doctrine, then followership will be a significantly greater part of it than it was in the last iteration. I think if we see a culture in the Army that recognizes good followership supporting great leadership, then that the relationship between the two, whether it's between leaders and followers, commanders and subordinates, whatever it may be, if people are having a healthier, happier time in their work, day to day, particularly in training, then on those days of operations, whether it be any type of operation from war fighting to peace support to United Nations type operations, then you will get a better product. The Army's fighting power will be greater from having better general work relationships in and amongst and between all of its people. And that's what we aim to do with all of our work.
Just on a personal note, if this had been around at the start of your military service, would it have made a difference to you? And what kind of difference might it have made?
I think so, because one thing I've found, I've been in the job for just coming up a year now, it makes you very reflective and introspective on your own career, history, behaviours and the like. And you realise that there is so much more to learn about how to lead, and in this case, how to follow better. So I think if we do make people just take stock, just pause for a moment in their followership, think about how they are supporting leaders, supporting peers and their teams, then that's got to be a good thing, because I can reflect, and people often will say to me when we talk about this subject that there have been times when I could have followed better, and lots of people have those reflections. And similarly, when leaders are thinking about how people are following them, then it makes them look inwards at what they're doing, how they're behaving and those sorts of things. And so if we're making people just pause, have a think about how they're acting and behaving, then that's got to be a good thing. I think it would have changed on a few occasions how I went about my business, and most other people that I've spoken to about it tend to agree as well.
Care to share any?
Probably not here. No, not publicly. But I suspect probably some other people who are shouting at the radio listening to this saying, yeah, it was me that he should have been following.
Lieutenant Colonel Dean Cannon, thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
News, discussions and analysis. This is SITREP.